Well, we're going first.
Okay. We welcome you to the convention and to the opening session, as the case may be, because the other two sessions were pushed off to a little later. And it promises to be a very informative and relevant session, as it has been in the past. Even though we have tried to move it to an easier slot on Friday, different arrangements could not be worked out. So I feel bad there isn't a bigger item to hear, but those that are here won't go away disappointed. I had the schuss of visiting Eretz Yisrael a few weeks ago to see our children and grandchildren, and of course when I walked in the door they immediately ran over to me and kissed the suitcase, because they know where the goodies are, I guess. But I'm mentioning that because it has to do with travel, and things have changed. The family dynamics, it used to be probably in Europe, you had a few generations of families in one house. It's certainly in the same city, and traveling was out of the question, and now it's a common day occurrence. So being able to keep kosher under the circumstances of traveling is an extremely important issue. I know I asked Rabbi Fishbein a few weeks ago upon my return from Eretz Yisrael. I said it would be a big service if we knew when you get on an airplane, and it says Bezden in Sedek of Amsterdam. He might be a very nice guy. He could be a taxi driver for all I know. I mean, we just don't know, and it might be a nice thing to consider, saying this Badatz is something that we ain't heard the Adam can rely upon. So we're going to begin by introducing our first speaker of the evening, Rabbi David Cohn, who is the administrative rabbinical coordinator of the CRC. Among his responsibilities, according to the website, are flavoring and ingredients. Everyone knows that things have changed a lot over the years, and you literally have to be a chemist par excellence, among other skills, to know what's going on with today's food products. And Rabbi Cohn definitely fits the bill. When I was in Telge Yeshiva in Cleveland, I was the official secretary of the Tzirei Agudas Yisrael, and we would write to companies, mainly candy bar companies, of course, find out if they were kosher. You know, unless the pig's foot was sticking out of the bar, they would always say, yeah, we're kosher, no lard, no nothing. But it's gotten very complicated, and Rabbi Cohn's an expert in this field, and we look forward to hearing what he has to say.
Thank you, Rabbi Beider. Nice to meet all of you. I have something I'm going to hand out to you. When we get to the right parts of it. I'm actually not speaking about traveling. That's going to be Rabbi Fishbein. I'm going to be speaking about medicines. And so I'm not sure exactly what the connection is. They both have to do with kashrus. And as you see, as Rabbi Beider mentioned, a good portion of our discussion of medicines is going to have to do with ingredients and some things that sound more esoteric than they really are. Just as a way of introduction, I'm going to be talking about the kashrus of regular medicines. I'm not speaking about taking medicines on Shabbos. And unless we really have a lot of time, I'm not going to speak about medicines for Pesach. I'm really just talking about medicine for year-round. And my goal is to try to give you some of the rules and some examples, and not get into all the real gory details. If you want, you can read on our website some more complicated things and more involved things. And a lot of what you're going to hear about comes from over the past couple of years, the CRC has put together a list of medicines that we do or don't recommend. And between the thought that went into preparing the list and then the experience of seeing that, that's what I'm going to try to share with you and show you what there is. In a number of places, I'll point out to you that not everybody agrees necessarily with the decisions we made. I'll try to be open and clear with you what we do, what we think one way that someone else doesn't necessarily agree with. Just a simple example of that is that the most hashgachas won't answer any question about something that they don't certify themselves. The Star K will answer medicine questions. If you call them up and you say to them, can you tell me about a medicine, they'll tell you yes or no. But on their website, on their public side, they will only put down things that they do recommend. They won't tell you anything they don't. If you call up, they'll tell you, no, don't take this. But on their public, they only have a list of things that they do recommend. And we, this is not a halacha difference, this is just a policy difference. We, our list has things that we do and don't recommend. You can see it on our website, you can see it on your, on our apps. You can get that information. We're willing to tell you that. That's just a little difference. But we'll get into more of them as we move along. Okay. The way it boils down to deciding on whether someone can or cannot take a medicine, what we boil down is into four questions. I'll run through them quickly, and then we're going to go through each one of them slowly through different examples. The first is, does the medicine contain anything that's kosher sensitive? Next, could the medicine be replaced by something that has no shilas to it? Is it possible to get something that's without any shilas at all? Third, how edible is this medicine? And lastly, how sick is the person who's taking this medicine? Okay, so we have these four questions, and we'll now go through each of them in a little more detail to explain what that means and examples of that and how that helps us in deciding whether a person could or cannot take a specific medicine. In this first one, which is, are there kosher-sensitive ingredients? You can imagine that's where hashgachas have the most ability to help. In the other questions, Rabbi First Wolfton, Rabbi Weinberg said there are plenty of rabbanim who could answer the other questions about how sick a person is, what he's allowed to do if he's sick. So we become involved in it just because we're trying to help give the medicine information, but it's in the first area that we're the most able, we have the most expertise to be able to help out, and that is we break down all ingredients as it relates to medicines into four groups. In our going through medicines, we've come with a list of about 300 ingredients that go into medicines, of which about three quarters of them fall. Yeah.
One of your questions was tasting it or something.
How edible is it?
Is that all you have to worry about in kosher? If it's an injectable medicine, you need to worry about.
That's a good question. I actually wasn't even planning to talk about it. Yes, you're correct. If it's something that's not eaten, if it's not ingested, let's say a suppository, or an injection, or a cream, right, we don't worry about that. That in Pesach, there's what to think about for that. We're going to avoid. We're not, probably not going to talk about Pesach, but for year-round, those things don't play a role. Let me just mention, before we get into the details, of these four questions, the most easy things to make permitted are in one of two ways. One is things that have completely no questionable ingredients. Okay, a very popular item is called Miralax. It's made of something called polyethylene glycol. That ingredient is innocuous. There's nothing, no hashish issues to it. It's the only one ingredient in the product, and it's fine. It's not a problem. And the other thing that makes things very easily mutter is if they're not edible. Most common is tablets that we consider to be not edible, and those are easy, also facially permitted. So then we have, in ingredients, we come to a list of about 300 ingredients that go into medicines. About three quarters of them have no questions to them at all. And the rest breaks down, we have three other groups, we call them trivial, minor, and serious. And I'll explain to you what each one of those means. Innocuous, this first group of innocuous is almost all the active ingredients in medicines. And certain things that you'll see a lot of, propylene glycol and silicon dioxide, water, a lot of these things that are really very innocuous. I mentioned to you that Miralax is okay, but there's also one brand of Floratab fluoride drops that has a whole bunch of ingredients in it, but they're all okay. There's nothing to them. There's certain whitening strips. Crest makes a number of whitening strips that we have listed on our thing, and they're all made out of ingredients that have no kashrus concerns to them. So those are okay. Those are easy to make mutter. They have no questions to them. What you're eating, what you're ingesting is not anything that has a shayla to it. A little higher than that is what we call trivial. That is to say, there's an ingredient in there that might be not kosher, but the way that ingredient is used, it's always bottled. The way it's used, it's such a tiny ingredient. We know from the way that they use it, it's always bottled, and therefore it doesn't really play a concern. What we would say in that case is, for something like that, if you had a substitute that was available, prefer the substitute that has no shayla to it. But if you don't have to, listen, it's bottled, so what's the problem? I mentioned that's what we hold in theory. in looking through our list of products, I can't find one that we didn't recommend because of that. So this is a theoretical position. Again, we didn't have one that didn't. I'll mention some examples of that to you. Gomarovic, you'll see on the side of products, something called polysorbate. So for this one, polysorbate 20 falls into this group. Stearate, it's in very many products, have something called magnesium stearate. Magnesium stearate is something that can most definitely be not kosher. The word stearate comes because it's from fat that usually comes from a sear. Okay, those are stearates. So stearates could be not kosher, but they're always used in very tiny proportions that are always bottled, and we don't consider them a concern. Okay. Now, to move up a little bit, it's what we call a minor issue. These are things that are probably kosher. The ingredient is probably kosher. The worst that it could be is, it would be asur midrabbanan. Not as serious as the last group is. These are things that would be asur midrabbanan. Or, they're asur midraisa, but they're bottled, except for a rule that's drabbanan. Okay, I hope I don't lose you for a second here. Certain things that are bottled midraisa, but not midrabbanan, like the dabar hamayim, it's called, something that plays a special role in the food. Those things are not bottled midrabbanan. And we'll see soon that there's a difference, that something's only asur midrabbanan makes a difference for a chayla. Okay, the most important things that fall into this group are flavors. Almost every liquid and chewable item that you take has a flavor in it, and we put flavors into this group. If I can get a drop technical for a second, flavors have in them many, many ingredients. Some of those ingredients could be terribly traded. But it's rare that the ingredients are so bad that they're more than asur midrabbanan for a person to take. Without getting into all the gory details, the way the flavor is used, it's rarely worse than asur midrabbanan for the person to take it. And therefore, we put flavors into this group. And we'll see how that plays out. Why do I care that it's on asur midrabbanan? Why isn't that bad enough? Things that are asur midrabbanan are asur also. So we'll see how that plays out. That if it's that these that are only asur midrabbanan have their group that they are. And also in this group is we put gel caps. Gel caps are, we're going to talk about them in a little bit later, but for simplicity, we put them into this group. We'll talk about that in a later. So for this group has two ingredients, two items that are very popular, gel caps and flavors, and that makes this group of how sensitive is the product. We had, in this way, I'm going to give you just an example that was a Yosim and Akal. An anomaly is there's a product called Sensa. Sensa is a weight loss product. It's a system of weight loss. And for many people, weight loss is something that's considered within the range of a chayla, that the coolers that are associated for a chayla would be appropriate, they should take it. When we thought about this product, the thought behind the sense of product is by giving you specific tastes that somehow encourages you to lose weight or to eat less, I don't remember exactly. And really the product is, the entire medicine is a flavor. That's all that it is. There isn't a medicinal item that has flavor to help you get it down. It's completely flavor. I'm not to say whether it works or doesn't work, but the whole technology behind it is the flavor that it has to it. And therefore, we were more master than usually. But usually, we would treat flavors in this group as the most serious. Our fourth group, most serious group for flavors, for ingredients, is items that are potentially asur midraisa. Okay, the three that are the most prominent of those that are either possibly asur midraisa or for sure asur midrabbanan are glycerin, fish oil, and grape juice. What is glycerin? Glycerin is what makes the most liquid medicines not kosher. What is glycerin? If you have a every oil or fat looks like this. Okay, this is a crude drawing of an oil or fat. Okay, it has something that looks like the letter E. Okay, this part is glycerin, and these look like wavy lines on the side are what they call fatty acids coming off of it. Okay, this is a very crude drawing of it. Every oil and fat looks exactly the same. They all have a glycerin on one side and some fatty acids coming off of them. What's the difference between olive oil and animal fat? How come olive oil has a certain taste to it and it's a liquid, and animal fat has a very different taste and it's a solid at room temperature? What's the difference? It's which fatty acids are attached to it. If these ones are attached to it, then it's cocoa butter. And if this one is attached to it, then it's olive oil or coconut oil or some other oil. And because it has all different types of properties based on what's attached to it. So what companies do is they want these fatty acids. The fatty acids are very desirable. They're used as flavoring ingredients. And these fatty, the companies do is they take the oil, put it into a huge piece of equipment. When I say huge, it's 100 feet tall and 10 feet across. And they put it into this piece of equipment at 700 degrees Fahrenheit. Huge temperatures in this huge piece of equipment. And what happens is the oil splits in here. The glycerin goes one way, and the fatty acids go the other way. The fatty acids is what they're looking for. That's what they want. And the glycerin is the byproduct. It's the garbage from this from what they're trying to make. That glycerin from animal fat is completely trained. It's Nevela, or from a chaser. It's absolutely trade. And that same glycerin can come from vegetable oil, and it's very kosher. So glycerin, it tastes good. It has a sweet taste to it. It's used in very large amounts in foods. And if there's glycerin in something, that's a suffix derisa. That food that's in there, excuse me, you might be custom with the rice. You may be with the rice and not be allowed to eat it. So that's what, it's very common in liquid medicines. And because of that, that's what makes liquid medicines, many liquid medicines not kosher. Fish oil is used not as much as glycerin, and of course grape juice is also drabonin. Grape juice, unless it comes with a hefshor on it, is samyayin, and it's also drabonin. Okay, we've covered one of our four questions, which was, are the kosher sensitive ingredients? And now we'll go to the next question, which is a little more tricky than the first one, which is, are there substitutes for this product that I want to take? I want to take fish oil. My doctor tells me that for my sickness I should take fish oil. And he tells me that my fish oil is this fish oil that he wants me to take is absolutely the greatest thing in the world, and it's going to take care of my sickness that I have. But my fish oil doesn't have to have hefshor on it. But there's another fish oil that does have hefshor on it. Okay, there's lots of fish oil that has a hefshor on it. I tell people all the time, there's a website, we don't make any money on this. Even though we send people all the time, it's called koshervitamins.com. They have all types of medicinal type products. So if you want fish oil with a hefshor on it, they have it. So, well, is that a substitute? Is that a legitimate substitute or is it not? That's a toss-up, whether how much it is. But the fish oil, if it's traced, is too serious for us to let someone take it. What happens if a person has a bad cold, they want to take Robitussin? Well, Robitussin has glycerin in it, and no one knows if it's kosher. They want to take Robitussin. But you know there's Triaminid that has a hefshor on it. You know that there's diabetics who take something called diabetic tussin. They're not allowed to take, they don't want to have glycerin, so they have something else called diabetic tussin that has no glycerin in it. So that's a substitute, that's fine. You could take that. So part of knowing whether a medicine is okay is not just to know whether the medicine has ingredients and this chayla is allowed to take it. If the way our list is organized, it's organized by categories. So all the cough medicines is next to each other. So this one is not recommended. Sometimes it's not recommended just because you look three lines later and you'll see there's another one that's roughly the same thing, and that's why we didn't recommend this one. A popular question we get is, we don't recommend the orange-flavored Metamucil. The Metamucil itself is made from something innocuous, something that doesn't have a cautious concern, but we don't recommend it because it has a flavor. So people say to us, but flavors, I mentioned to you, are not such a serious concern, and for a cholo, we would allow them to take a little bit of flavor, so what's wrong with orange Metamucil? That's all that's in there is a few little things and the flavor. Well, it's because if you look at the list of laxatives that there are, there's so many of them that are acceptable that there's no reason to take this one that has, why take this one when the other one has a substitute? On occasion, the person says to us, oh, no, but the only thing that works for me is Metamucil. That's the only thing that works for me. Okay, that's a rabbinic question. You ask your rabbi, this is the only thing that works for me. Okay, then maybe it's not a substitute. For you, maybe it's not a substitute. One person wants to take melatonin. There's a company that's called Natural. that makes melatonin. Their liquid melatonin has sensitive ingredients to it. Okay? But their pills don't have it. So, to us, that seems to us like there's a substitute. Why take the liquid if you can take the pill? The pill has no xylitol to it, and the liquid does. Nicorette gum. Okay, because someone who's trying to stop smoking, and he feels that taking nicorette gum will help him. So we asked Rabbi Schwartz, should we treat that person as a chayla? He said, yes. The person who's trying to stop smoking should be treated like a chayla. It's for his health and well-being, and we should treat him like a chayla. But, you know, nicorette lozenges have very few xylitol to it, but nicorette gum has a much more serious xylitol to it. So we don't recommend the gum, even though by the technical rules, we're not going to say, well, this would be mutter, but it's not, because we have a substitute. Because we can get the same medicinal value out of taking the nicorette lozenge instead of taking the nicorette gum. So, again, in each of these, as we work through this, if you were to look at the medicine by itself, you might say, well, for this kind of a chalut, he could take that kind of a suffix issue to it. But this point of, is there a substitute, plays a role. You look through the many of the items or similar items to say, well, maybe we can give them something else that's played. That could do the same medicinal purpose, in which case you can't take this. Okay, we're on to our third question. We've now decided that the medicine has a sensitive ingredient to it, and we don't have a substitute for it. Now we move on to, is the medicine edible or not? And in this, we break down edible into three different levels of how edible something can be. The first is things that are completely edible, which is to say, it's a food-like item, okay? A cough drop. Okay, it's a food-like item. It's something that you eat it, and you get pleasure out of eating this food. You take a glucose drink. Okay? People who want to be tested for diabetes take a glucose drink. Okay, it's sugar and water. That's what it tastes like. That's edible. Of course, many liquid medicines, we treat liquid medicines as if they're edible. It's questionable whether they are. They're borderline as to whether they are or not edible. We treat them as if they are edible. And even some chewables are considered to be edible. I have a daughter who takes something chewable. It has an extra on it. And she chokes it down every day. That's how inedible she thinks it is. And maybe on certain chewable items, they are not considered edible. So that's a toss-up. We dump all chewables on liquids as considered them edible, even though you might... it's very reasonable to possibly disagree on that. That's the first group. Those things that are edible, there's no hefker. There's nothing there that tells you a certain person could take it. But our next group is called Shalaka Derech Achila. Shalaka Derech Achila means I'm not eating it in the regular manner that people eat food. The Gemara's example of Shalaka Derech Achila are examples of foods that are really edible. Okay, the Gemara gives examples of black pepper, or oil, or vinegar. And the Gemara says if you eat those foods plain, it's Shalaka Derech Achila, because black pepper is usable as an ingredient. But people don't eat spoonfuls of black pepper. That's not the regular way that you eat the food. Okay, or vinegar also. Tonight they're going to serve supper and there's going to be a salad. I'm sure there's going to be vinegar in it. But that's how you eat vinegar. You don't eat vinegar in I'll drink a cup of it. So the Gemara says if a person eats a food in that manner, it's shalat kederach achila. It's only asr midrabbanan for the person to eat that. If not an isr, even if the food would be asr midraisa, it's only isr midrabbanan to eat like that because he's not eating it in the regular way. And into that group, we put the most prominent example that we have for that is gel caps. Now, I have said to you before, I mentioned that here is where gel caps fits in. What are gel caps? There's two forms of gel caps. One is the hard gel caps that look like two pieces that fit together. There's a hard gel caps. And then there's the soft gels, which are kishmoy kehu. It's like a soft, like a pillow. And inside of it, some kind of a liquid is sitting inside of it. Okay, what's the difference between those? The hard ones are pure gelatin. You take something that looks like a pencil, take the pencil, you dunk it into the liquid, you pull it out, and it dries on the end of it, and it hardens into a gel cap. Okay? It's 100% pure gelatin. Gelatin we treat as isser. Gelatin usually is made out of pigs, unless you make special with hashkafa, it's made out of pigs, and it's It's completely yesir, and just don't even put that as a yesir. Okay. Rav Fishman says there is such a thing as kosher gelatin. It's true, there is kosher gelatin. Not for our discussion tonight, but it's pure and kosher and power. Okay, here we go. Thank you. I let me get that one second. I'm going to finish that. The soft gels are made of not pure gelatin. It's a mixture of gelatin and a few other ingredients, including usually glycerin, a few other little ingredients that are mixing together and made into this soft like pouch. And the medicine is put in as it's being formed. The liquid medicine is put in as it's being formed. And it looks like magical because there doesn't seem to be any opening in it. Okay? It's like magical how they get it in. And that's what you have. So those items, the gel caps, the gelatin itself is an edible item. Gelatin is used in making yogurts and all kinds of other foods. So gelatin is an edible item. But nobody... So ask the fact that you... That it's gelatin is edible. The fact that you swallowed it is also considered achila. It's learned out from matzah. The Gemara says if you swallow matzah, it's a swallowing, even though you didn't chew it, it's also considered makes it edible. So the fact that you swallow the gel cap also doesn't make it not edible. But what makes it not edible is the fact that nobody eats pure gelatin. Eating pure gelatin is like eating pure vinegar. Vinegar is edible, but swallowing vinegar is usur. But swallowing pure vinegar is shlokidar achila. So for a person to have a gel cap is also mitzvah rabbanon because he's eating it in the not typical way. The typical way to have it is you mix gelatin into your yogurt and it thickens your yogurt and that's how you eat it. But to eat it pure as is, it's just like eating black pepper. We don't eat black pepper pure. Yes?
Didn't you mention earlier that there's a little geschmack that you get on it, like flavor in there, and they use it for an
ounce? If they use it for... If, you think if it would be tasty...
You don't explain
it, but it's
geschmack.
If it's tasty... But that's not true of a gelatin capsule. The gel capsule is just, it tastes like a piece of plastic. So if I wouldn't tell you that it was made out of food, it looks like a piece of plastic. It doesn't have any taste, any pleasure out of drinking, out of eating the thing. Rabbi Fishbane asked me to mention that there was, 75 years ago, there was a big machlokes as to whether gelatin made out of trade animals, animal bones, is kosher or not. And it's been accepted that it's not considered kosher. There were great posthumous who held that it is mutter under certain conditions, and there continue to this day to be people who give hashkacha on gelatin made out of animal bones, hopefully animal bones as opposed to animal hides, and they give hashkacha to it and they say that it's kosher and they sell it as kosher gelatin. That product is not accepted as kosher by the Hamoyam, by the generally accepted, that's not generally accepted as kosher. So there are products that list on them, this contains kosher gelatin, unless it was really made special under a reputable hashgacha, that, so to speak, kosher gelatin is not kosher to the standard that we consider kosher. Can I say that it's no standard? It's not that it's no standard, it is a standard of kosher. By no means is it the standard that we consider to be kosher. So we would treat that as not kosher gelatin. So here we have our shalokidar chachila. Shalokidar chachila has a special into it, it's asa midrabanan, it's mutta for a choyla. So a person who's the right level of choyla, we'll talk about that in a second, what level of choyla would be allowed to take this midrabanan? And I mentioned there could be three categories. We have edible food, edible medicines, shalakid achachila, and ones that are totally inedible. And we, the things that are shalakid, that are completely not edible, are mutta for a choyla to take. For a technicality, a regular person wouldn't take it, but basically it's mutta for everybody. For people to take as a medicine, into that category we put tablets like pills into that group. I'll mention to you that the Sarki does not agree with that. The Sarki thinks that tablets should be treated as being shalikidar achila rather than not royal achila, and therefore they look into the ingredients in the tablet. We don't. We tell people that all tablets are okay. And now we come to two questions about what things are considered edible. The first is about vitamins. I'm discussing a vitamin that's in a pill form, so I just said to you that vitamins are not considered, that pills are not considered edible. In which case you say, well, if pills are not edible, then I can go to CVS and buy whatever vitamins I want to, because if I buy them in a pill form, it should be okay. So there's a difference of opinion. Ramosha Health, that since the person takes a vitamin as a food replacer, he takes the vitamin, the doctor said, you need to have more vitamin C. instead of eating three oranges, he chooses to take a vitamin C pill. Okay, and he needs a little extra iron, so instead of eating a steak, he goes and takes an iron pill. So for that, person is really taking it as food, and it goes into something called ashrei, that the person, because he's doing that, is makes it considered edible. That was what Rav Moshe held, and many held like that, and the Sirsi follows that position, which is to say that we tell people that vitamins need to have hashgacha on them. Others did not agree with that, and others say that when a person takes a pill, it's also considered, if it's a vitamin in a pill form, it's also considered not edible, and it's okay for him to take it. What's worth remembering is the reason for this din, the reason for this chumra by a vitamin is because the person is taking it as a food replacement. And therefore, we only tell people not to take vitamins when they're taking it as a food replacement. Like a person comes and says, I want to take a multivitamin. Every day, I'm just for my general health and well-being. But when a person comes in and says, the doctor told me I have an iron deficiency, and I need to take iron to make up, not because I need a little iron. I need to take iron. It's not a food replacement to say eat 400 steaks a day. Okay, that's not. So this is not a food replacement. At this point, it's crossed the line, and it's become a medicine, and then we would tell the person to take it. And the next item that are questionable whether they're edible is mouthwash and toothpaste. There's two very different views as to whether that is or is not considered edible. Okay, I watched two prominent Puskin. Each tasted the same mouthwash, and one was like, this is wonderful, it's perfect, it's food, it's 100% edible. And the other one spit it out, so I can't imagine. Anyway, he put the stuff into his mouth. So it's two very different ways of looking at it. Many Puskin have different views on that, mouthwash and toothpaste. Rabbi Schwartz himself holds that they're not considered edible, and they therefore don't need to have hashgacha on them. But he says, lemaisa is, there are mouthwashes that have brand name mouthwashes in every supermarket in the store. If you look on that list, there's a number of Listerine products that are under very reputable hashgacha. They don't have it on the package, but they're under reputable hashgacha. And so Rabbi Schwartz says, well, if you have that available to you, forget about ones of smaller brands that have hashgacha. These are ones that are very reputable. They're in every pharmacy in the country. Why not take that? Why take the one that's a question? Even though he personally holds that it doesn't need hashgacha. He says, but why take it? And the same thing with toothpaste. He says, the most serious ingredient in toothpaste is glycerin. Many toothpastes have glycerin in it. So he holds that it's not considered edible. But he says, there are many toothpastes that don't have glycerin in them. You look at our list, there's a whole bunch of them that don't have glycerin in them. So he says, so why take this one that has a sulfur glycerin in it when you take the other one that doesn't have a sulfur glycerin in it? And so our list in those, for each one of them says, these don't need hashgacha, but use these, if preferably these ones, because they're available without any chance. And not, oh yes, okay, for Pesach, we tell people that they should take the ones with hashgacha, the ones that we know, okay. Okay, and last is, we have to think about how sick the person is who's taking this medicine. And here also we have three groups of how we rate a person's sickness. The most serious is, if someone is in a sakana or suffolk sakana, that means that the person is either actually in danger right now, or what he has could lead him to a danger. And that group includes not only people who are ill sitting in the hospital or just sick like that, but people who have infections. Just about every infection, if you let it go and you don't treat the person, can lead to sakana. Not every, but just about everyone can lead it. If you let it go and you don't take care of it, it can lead to the next and to the next to a sakana. Many things that people get prescriptions for, again, not everything, but many things that are need prescription medication are in that group. And for a person in sakana, the thing is, he could do anything. He could be on just about every issur. But he can't be on the issur if there's a substitute. He can't. It's not open season. He can do whatever he wants to. He can do whatever he wants to if it's for his treatment, and he doesn't have a substitute. So he has to, there has to be a little bit of thought to say is, if there's chance, if there's time, a little thought to say is, well, do I need to take this? The person has an infection. Okay, if my 10-year-old child has an infection, and the doctor prescribes them a liquid antibiotic, but my 10-year-old can take a pill antibiotic. So what's the difference? He's going to get just as better with a pill as he will with a liquid. So why? You're right. If we treat it as a suffolk sakana, he could take it. Okay, but why should he? Why don't I say, doctor, could you write the prescription as a pill instead of a liquid? So, well, the doctor doesn't care. My 10-year-old could take a pill, so why shouldn't he take that? So a little bit of thought has to go into that. But basically, the person who's a choila, okay, I'm only down. The person who's a choila, who's a choila who's a sakhan, who could take basically everything. The next level down is what's called the Cholei She'eibar Sakana, someone who's incapacitated, a person who's not functioning the way a regular person is able to function. He can't sleep, or he can't get out of bed, or he's always sleeping, or he's some part about him is not functioning the way it's supposed to be. That person is allowed to do the Eibar, to take care of himself. Many Isurim Drabanan, not Isurim Drabanan of eating food that are Asurim Drabanan, but most other Isurim Drabanan, including food that are Shalakid Archachilim. So the Cholei, who's a Cholei She'eibar Sakana, which is many of the things that people take over the counter medicine for, are things that are Cholei She'eibar Sakana. I mean, the person's not functioning right, but they're not. There's no danger to them, it's just they're just non-functional. That person could take a gel cap. If he has no other option, the person has a terrible migraine headache, and the medicine that's going to help him is in a gel cap. He's a Cholei She'eibar Sakana, and he could take the gel cap, but only if the same medicine doesn't come, of course, in a pill form. If it comes in both forms, so why is he taking this one if he has a substitute? And into this group of Cholei She'eibar Sakana is a whole bunch of questions. It's not really questions. It really depends on the person's situation. Some people take probiotics because they think it makes them feel good. They're not Cholei She'eibar Sakana. There's other people take probiotics because they're totally non-functional. Because of their stomach issue, that hopefully this probiotic will help, they need this to make them functional, they consider Cholei She'eibar Sakana. I mentioned before about people taking for weight loss or for smoking prevention or people take cough drops. Well, there are people take cough drops because they like sucking candies. And the people take cough drops because they're keeling over because they have such a horrible cough. So there's a big range of why people take it. Okay. And then the last group is people called Nechush, someone who's just uncomfortable. He's taking a medicine just because he has a little bit of a cold or a headache or breath freshener. You know, he wants to make his breath taste a little better. So those kind of things, those people are not allowed to do anything. There's none of the things that are possible would they be allowed to do. Okay, so if I can just summarize, we had our four questions to help us decide whether a person can take a medicine. First was we wanted to know whether there's anything sensitive about this. And it's not just a matter of, it's not just a yes or no, it's that if there's something sensitive, it might be only somewhat sensitive and it's going to be mutter for this type of cholera. The next question was whether there are substitutes. And that plays itself into all things. Anything that's mutter is only mutter, assuming that the person doesn't have a substitute for it. The next one is how edible the medicine is. And there we had our three groups. Things that are totally not edible are okay, and things that are in between edible, the shlokidar chachil, are mutter for certain types of cholera. And then we've thought about how sick the person is who's taking the medicine, and depending on his level of sickness, might be mutter or not allowed to take different amounts of medicine. Okay. Any questions? Yes?
Could you repeat the question?
Okay, so the question was, telling you about over-the-counter, my examples were all over-the-counter medicines, it's true. We focus on over-the-counter medicines. So how do we know about a prescription medicine? How do we know what the ingredients are in that? And how do we know whether it's kosher or there are substitutes, etc.? So the two parts of the answer. One is as far as the ingredients. Did you ever, when you get a medicine, it comes with this long, long white piece of paper with a million words on it? Okay, well, that's a legal piece of paper that they have to stick into your medicine. And those are all published. Those are all part of, given to the government, and they're all published, and they have the ingredients on there. The ingredients are on that piece of paper. If you can make your way through all that boring writing, it's in there, the ingredients that are in there. So we actually do look up medicine on occasion. We can look up the ingredients on all prescription medications. The government has a website with everybody, those little words are on a website. And so the other question is, as a rule, the prescription medications are for adults in pill form. We don't consider that an issue at all, to even think about it. When they're for children, by and large, they're for things that are so serious that people are not asking questions. Rightfully not asking questions. They're just saying, it's for that kind of thing, they don't have to take it. If you looked into the finer details, maybe you could. Maybe there would be specific ones there or not, but we tend to focus away from that. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. I have copies of our list. When we started, there was enough copies for everybody. but now we have too many people. So whoever would like to take a copy of our list, it's available on our website, updates itself all the time.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Cohn.